This is Patrick Daly and welcome to Interlinks. Interlinks is a program about connections, international business, supply chains and globalization and the effects these have had on our life, our work and our travel over recent times. Today's program, I'm joined again by my colleagues from the Supply Chain Special Interest Group of the Society for the Advancement of Consulting to discuss the issues of energy security and geopolitical change and how they are influencing the thinking of business strategists and decision makers as they look to design and configure the supply chains of the future. So joining me today, we have Lisa Anderson, president of LMA Consulting, joining us from the Los Angeles metro area. Welcome, Lisa.
Glad to be here.
Elizabeth Warren, president of Dialed In Partners, also in the Los Angeles metro area in San Pedro, I think. Is that right, Elizabeth?
That is correct, Patrick. Thank you. Great to be here.
And Diane Garcia, who is the president of Lorraine Consulting in Phoenix in Arizona. Welcome, Diane. We have a situation in the world where things seem to be kind of reconfiguring. Change is taking place at a accelerating rate. People are realigning their alliances and their allegiances. And I'm interested in getting a perspective from the US in terms of energy. So, Lisa, what's the situation currently in the US with regard to energy security? What's the thinking? And I know you have some skepticism about the speed or the completeness of the green transformation, but from a positive point of view, what do you see happening that has, you know, potential to really change things over the coming years?
Well, I mean, we start with the positive base of this is that natural gas, we've been able to really improve our the way we've been producing natural gas, and it's you know, one of the best in terms of energy efficiency, clean production in the world, if not the best. So that's very exciting, and we have an abundant supply if we want to produce it. So that's one thing that's good. And we certainly invested. I mean, the oil companies, as for an example, have invested a significant amount of money in renewables and alternate forms of energy. Many companies actually have invested in alternate forms of energy and renewables and have made significant progress. The timing compared to the regulations in California is problematic, but, you know, they've made a significant amount of progress in moving towards renewable energy, clean energy. And so there is significant progress, and there's actually, exciting possibilities as well on the horizon with some discoveries. I think it's on hydrogen and other forms. So, but they have to figure, you know, there's some technology that is not yet available that has to be worked through. But there's been tremendous progress in this arena.
Okay, and in the day to day, say Diane, when you're out and about and in people's daily lives, are renewables beginning to show up as a fact of life, you know, in electric cars, in people with solar panels for their own consumption? What's happening in that space in the US?
I live in Phoenix, Arizona, which is where I'm based. And so, of course, in the area I'm living, there are solar panels and solar energy sources everywhere on warehousing space, offices, homes here in the U.S. In my personal travel and business travel, I know that I've seen, you know, a lot more of the Tesla and UV vehicles in rental car areas in the airport. So as I've been looking to rent a vehicle for the week visiting clients, I see UV vehicles more available than I ever have. So I do think that, you know, we're starting to see more of the renewable energy sources, whether that be, you know, solar or electric sources. But I will say, as I was trying to use the Tesla and look for a charging station, it was quite an event, especially when you don't have a ton of time, you know, from client to client. So we have the vehicles. I don't know that we have all of the charging stations and accommodations that go along with it.
Okay. Did you hire a vehicle or do you own one?
I was renting. I don't own a EV myself.
Okay. Okay. I think a lot of people who own the vehicles, they have charging stations at their home, right? And some of them even use the solar panels that they have in their house to take the power to charge their batteries. It's noticeable here. There was a news report last week which said for the first time ever, the sale of electric vehicles had outpaced the sale of diesel vehicles, and diesel is much more popular, I think, in Europe than it is in America. But EVs have now taken over. And I just notice when I'm out and about on the streets that there's more and more and more of them. And most of the new registrations here, the registration because the year is on the number plate. A huge proportion of the new registrations are EVs. And there's massive investment going on here in wind power, especially because they reckon that countries like Ireland and Scotland that are on the kind of western fringes of Europe, where the wind never really stops, they reckon here in Ireland we have the capability to generate seven times our own needs in terms of wind power. So there's a lot going on in that space.
Does Ireland have they started to invest, or have you seen wave energy where the use of the wave and the turbines, since you know you're surrounded by water?
Yeah, the main thrust seems to be wind, and both onshore and offshore. So there's some plans for very large offshore wind generation turbines. In terms of the wave generated power, my understanding is that the technology is a bit more early stage and perhaps a bit more expensive. So there's not a lot in a practical sense happening in that sense. But I would imagine that when that becomes a practical alternative, again, places like Ireland and Scotland on the western fringes of Europe are going to be very important sources of that kind of energy as well.
I think we've been doing some in the U.S. the offshore wind, and I think it's working for the wind aspects, but we are seeing some issues with whales.
Some issues with what? Sorry.
Whales. They're getting, I don't know what's happening exactly. There's okay. No proven link, but but they seem to be dying or. Okay. Like getting confused by the sound.
Okay. I guess everything has its pros and its cons, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I understand Elizabeth, one of the major generators of emissions is the shipping trade, which I know is an industry that you're close to. So what are you aware of that's happening there in terms of new low emissions ships and vessels and so on?
Well, I don't have the statistics on specific ships in general. I can tell you what's happening in Southern California. And I know that the shipping industry is certainly a global contributor to emissions. And shipping lines are building larger, more efficient ships and doing the best that they can to be have alternative fuels where they can reduce their emissions on a global basis. At the ports of LA and Long Beach here in Southern California, for many, many years, they have been plugging into electric power when they come into port. So they're not burning any of the cheap fuels, the bunker fuels that they use often to cross the oceans with. One of the challenges that we have in Southern California, and this is certainly going to be a challenge that we're going to see globally as well, and that is to be able to generate enough power, not only to feed our ports with electricity and all of the infrastructure that's around the ports, but also our communities in general, our cities, cars, electric cars, and all of the other electricity that power that we need in order to, you know, have a healthy, robust economy. Last year, and certainly climate change has had a hand in changing how we do things. Here in Southern California last year with the heat waves that we had, we actually had our governor of California call several of our ports multiple times, many times over the summer, and tell our ports not to allow the ships to plug into electric power when they were calling at port because it would cause a brownout throughout the rest of the city or the rest of the region. So that, you know, is another problem unto itself, is how do we generate enough clean power, not only to keep our cities running, but then also to keep our economy running with the ships, the cargo handling equipment, and the trucks that we currently have. That's just with our current population of trucks, cargo handling equipment, et cetera. And we have here in California, in Southern California, or California in general, we have several mandates. By 2030, all of our cargo handling equipment at the ports of LA and Long Beach will need to be zero emissions. So that's only 7 years away. In less in about 11, 12 years, in 2035, all of our trucks, all of our drayage trucks will have to be zero emission. So it sounds like, and then by 2035, our governor has also said no more gasoline powered cars in California. So everything will have to be electric. So in the next, 10 to 12 years, we have this huge transition to electric power, but we don't have the capacity that to generate that power. So there is, I agree with Lisa and Diane, there's a lot of progress being made, but I don't, at this point here in Southern California, at least our industry is not very optimistic that we're going to meet those deadlines.
Okay.
So we've got a lot to do in the next 10 to 12 years. And it's going to be a challenge, definitely going to be a huge hurdle to make this transition.
93.9 Dublin South FM.
There are mandates here as well. There's a European wide mandate, which is that we have to reduce emissions by 50%, I think, by 2030, and we have to be net zero by 2050 across the whole economy. So it's going to be a massive challenge. But I guess if you don't put those kind of stakes in the ground, people simply won't move, will they? We've seen that for decades. We could have been much further along had we started earlier, but we couldn't get the urgency for whatever reason. So The time, I think, has come, hasn't it? And it kind of brings us to the geopolitical question, because I think the what happened with the war in Europe, and the fact that Russia is a large supplier of fossil fuels, has kind of highlighted the fact that many of the places that supply fossil fuels, with the exception maybe of the United States, are very problematic places geopolitically, you know, whether it be Saudi Arabia or Venezuela or Nigeria or Russia. So I know, Lisa, you have a view on this, particularly about the US pivot away from China, which is not a fossil fuel related issue, but it is a related issue in the sense that geopolitical tensions are driving that. So where do you see, from a supply chain point of view, where do you see U.S. companies, manufacturers, and so on pivoting to away from China, and how are they going about that?
Well, I would say, first of all, I do think China's made it somewhat related to fossil fuels because they've been buying up the Russian oil. So Russia still sells their oil for significant prices. And actually, coincidentally, I didn't remember that that was today's topic at the time, but in April of 2020, the president of China said, he said it for the world to hear, that they are, he said they must tighten their international production chain's dependence on China so they can, so forming powerful countermeasures and deterrent capabilities based on artificially cutting off supply to foreigners. So basically, so that he could cut off supply whenever he wanted to people like both, you know, the US, Ireland, and have, be able to do what he wanted to do. So I am very concerned about China. You're correct. So a lot of it can be reshored, to answer your question. So it depends on, really, I don't believe in reshoring, really. It's really more about where your customers are located. Mm. So if your customers happen to be located in the US, which, you know, many of our customers are, because there's significant volumes here, then it may make sense to bring it back to the US. Now, it depends. If your product is big and bulky, it's going to be more expensive to transport. So you have to pay attention to, you know, your type of product and also where your product can be produced effectively. So does it need high skills, talent, for example? So like in the medical industry, the medical devices are going to like Mexico, Costa Rica, in the Dominican Republic. I was on a panel last year that was talking about nearshoring, reshoring in the medical device industry. And so they're going to all of the above. For example, Costa Rica actually has quite a bit of high tech talent. I think it's the assembly is what it's called, but of computer chips.
Mexican maquiladores.
Yep, that's right. And so there's Mexico's like the largest, and then Costa Rica, Dominican Republic, you know, some of the other Latin American countries. However, you really do have to be cautious because China is buying up terminals at ports, and they also have a Belt and Road Initiative that where they're investing in certain countries so they can turn off supply. And so you really have to be careful about where you're going and what your potential risks might be, and perhaps just diversify, right? So that you have a potential supply in multiple places close to your customers. So it just depends. So if they have high labor costs, have a high labor component in their product or a high transportation component, they will most likely produce closer to customers. And if they have a low labor component, why not just automate? If you can automate it out, you may as well. You probably can just put it as close to your customers as you can. So you may very well come back to the U.S. So it just depends. But in this case, they're coming closer to customers is in essence what they're doing.
Yeah. So there are different strategies depending on what the circumstances are and where your markets are. So we see companies supplying the North American market, maybe going to some Latin American countries. We see this other strategy of a China plus one, which is to have a kind of a hedge, have another manufacturing location in Asia. It might be in Vietnam or it might be in Malaysia, and India actually is becoming a country of
I was just going to say that one of the other key things is India. I actually just did a special report and had a lot of reshoring, nearshoring experts in the special report. And as far as Asian countries go, Vietnam and India are the two, you know, most popular. The issue that the U.S. has is we need scale. And so India has some ability to scale. They do have infrastructure issues. They're certainly working on them. Mm. But it also is, there's a lot of conflicts between them and China. So there's some risk there. And that's why Mexico is like more popular than other smaller Latin American countries from a point of view of scale. And actually, that's why the U.S. has an advantage still.
Yeah, yeah. I've been talking to some companies that are kind of worried because one in particular I was talking to in the pharmaceutical industry, and they have many factories around the world, and there's something like 60 odd locations around the world. But they have a factory in China, which makes certain products that they don't make anywhere else. So they're quite exposed, and they're a little yeah. concerned, and maybe just kind of caught a little flat-footed with that. And I think there's a lot of that going on. And I think what we've seen with the G7 meeting and some of the statements they're making about China is that the lines are really being drawn there. So I think businesses want to be paying a lot of attention because there could be issues, maybe not a full-blown conflict, but certainly, you know, there could be sanctions, there could be just all sorts of issues that perhaps it would be better just to hedge against them now that the time is there, which might not be there in the future. So
and actually, Patrick, there's one other thing I wanted to point out since you brought up energy earlier. Mm-hmm. Two things. One, when you're nearshoring, you also have to pay attention to if where you're reshoring or nearshoring has enough power. So that you can make sure that you can actually produce your product. If you can get factories and workers, it's not enough if you don't have power. So it's another thing to look for. And then the other thing I would say about that is that we were talking about the positive side of renewable energy. Well, China's been producing a coal factory. Like, I don't remember if it's once a week or once a month, but it's something significant. So
yeah.
If we look at that, you know, we would be thinking about, you know, moving away as well.
Sure, sure. So, Diane and Elizabeth, with all of these things going on, how is it affecting your own choices as regards the energy that you use, or your travel decisions, or where you would do business if you got a call? Elizabeth, what's your thinking on those questions?
Well, Patrick, you're putting me on the hot seat.
Well, I'll give you my own answers in a second.
You know, we do the best that we can here in Los Angeles, you know, making the best choices that we can with what is available to us at the time. We do not have electric cars yet, although we are looking into our next cars being electric. Our daughter just bought an electric Mustang. So, you know, we as a family, we are looking to do that. I have been working remotely at home for the past 15, 17 years. So I have had a lot of reductions in my commute, and we do a lot more Zoom meetings now than we used to, but there's still nothing like being in person. So I still do some in-person meetings. I don't travel as much as I used to. Mm. And part of that is just because business has changed. You know, prior to the pandemic, we didn't really think twice about jumping on an airplane to go have an in-person meeting. Now we do a lot of that by Zoom.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Diane? What's your own reaction to
that? I'm very similar to Elizabeth in the fact that I, like she said, we do our best, and I've been working from home for quite some time, and my footprint in terms of driving has been a lot smaller, I think, than the average. But I think just in general, as a supply chain minded professional, I just use the same concepts I would use with my clients in my own personal life. So meaning, when I place orders that I know are coming from states far, far away, I don't, you know, place shipments that I can do in a wise way and say, okay, my reorder point is not to send a truck to my house every day or every other day. Perhaps I, you know, make a little bit bigger purchases so that I can have the stuff on the shelf. But I do that with the, you know, the most economical and environmentally sound decisions. So I think it's just taking those same practices into your day to day. And how do you, you know, knowing where your materials and your supplies and your, you know, your purchases are coming from.
Yeah. Yeah. Likewise here for me, I've been working from home for maybe 14 years when the pandemic started. So that's probably 17 years now, like yourself, Elizabeth. And travel has dropped. I would say my travel's maybe 20-25% of what it used to be. And it's not so much by design. That's just the way it is now, that people are more comfortable with video meetings and so on. So those very important meetings that require the personal touch are still there. But many of the other routine meetings where we were traveling to see people are not necessary anymore, you know, in the execution of standard types of work tasks. In terms of doing business, I did a lot of business in China in the noughties up to about 2010. I'm not sure whether I would be keen to do business there again. And maybe there are some other places around the world. Like I've been to Egypt, and I've been to Uruguay, and I've been to the Arab Emirates. And I think most of those places I would probably still go to, but some of them would raise a few questions nowadays with regard to cybersecurity and other issues. So it's certainly a changing world, and it's not one that we foresaw. I certainly didn't see it. So might just go to you, Lisa, for a parting word. We've just got maybe a 1 minute left. Just a sum up or anything that is in your mind you'd like to say about what we've been talking about.
Well, I would agree in the sense that my driving in the car for clients has reduced dramatically. And I fly a little bit more than I used to, but I would say from a departing point of view, I think that we've made tremendous progress in terms of our looking at clean energy, renewable energy. We have in the US, we have many companies focused on the topic. So we'll, you know, I think we'll continue to innovate and be successful. Like Elizabeth said, we have to get our regulations to coincide with that progress, and then we could be successful. But we have a lot of nearshoring, reshoring happening from a geopolitical standpoint, but it also does save energy, actually.
Yeah. And I guess we've seen tremendous resilience of economies in America and in Europe in the face of all the challenges. And these challenges with energy are a spur to innovation. So, you know, it's not all doom and gloom out there. I think, you know, there's a lot of potential to change the world for the better, albeit, you know, quite challenging for all of us to get there. So thanks again, Lisa, Diane, and Elizabeth. And thanks also to our listeners for tuning in again today. And be aware that if you enjoyed this episode, you can find the full series of over 120 episodes of Interlinks on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, and other major podcast platforms. So until next time, keep well and stay safe.